a surprise in Governor Holcomb's final State of the State, members of Congress not running for re-election, plus legislative agendas and more. From the television studios at WFYI, it's Indiana Week in Review for the week ending January 12th, 2024.
Indiana Week in Review is made possible by the supporters of Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations.
This week, Governor Eric Holcomb spent most of his final State of the State address reflecting on Indiana's accomplishments in his 7 years in office, but he did have a big announcement for his final year. Holcomb reflected on what he calls the Indiana model, which he describes as not being content with mediocrity and seeking excellence with giant leaps. To back up that argument, he cited some numbers.
Our private sector employment is up by 200,000 to an all-time high, while our unemployment rolls remain at historic lows.
Holcomb stressed that his work isn't done, and he announced that his economic development initiative, Ready 2.0, will receive a boost from the single largest grant award in the history of the Lilly Endowment.
$250 million to support Ready 2.0 projects focused on blight reduction, redevelopment, and arts and cultural initiatives throughout our entire state.
Those awards are set to be announced in April.
Has Indiana taken giant leaps forward the last 7 years? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat, Ann Delaney. Republican, Mike O'Brien. O'Shea Boyd, editor-in-chief of Mirror Indy. And Nikki Kelly, editor-in-chief of the Indiana Capital Chronicle. I'm Indiana Public Broadcasting State House Bureau Chief Brandon Smith. First, I want to note that the Lilly Endowment also provides funding for Indiana Public Broadcasting News. So with that disclosure out of the way, Mike O'Brien, Holcomb's Indiana model, as he described it, fact or fiction?
It's what he's tried to build. You know, that speech was vintage Eric Holcomb. You know, it focused on the things that he hasn't paid a lot of attention to in state government. There's things he spent a lot of time paying attention to in state government that I think most of which I think are top of mind for Hoosiers. So education, workforce, economic development, and how they're all connected. And so that speech and his agenda has elements of all of that. It's clearly been his passion for the last 7 years. You know, and the numbers prove it out. $50 billion in new investment. We're seeing high-tech industry choose Indiana. The battery plants, the $50 billion in outside investment, the LEAP project. On the education side, he's going to focus, along with the Republicans in the legislature, on making sure kids can read in the third grade. Average teacher pay is up to $60,000, which is $10,000 beyond what the goal even was. So there were a lot of high points that he hit, but I thought it was classic Eric, and finished on a high note, I think.
Ann Delaney, if I had a dollar for every time you said Indiana takes only baby steps, I wouldn't have to host this show anymore. But
is that a goal of yours?
We'll see.
We'll see how it goes.
but considering those numbers that Mike and the governor in his speech talked about, the unemployment highs, the unemployment lows, economic development growth, teacher salaries nearing, not at 60 yet, but I think he said
at
next year, I think he said that they will hit $60,000
next year
average. Are those giant leaps forward?
Well, certainly the teacher pay is a very substantial leap forward. I mean, the unemployment rate and the employment rate are a function of the national economy, which is affecting all of the states, not just Indiana. It's Joe Biden's economic policy that's done that.
And Donald Trump.
The other thing, I think it predates Donald Trump.
We haven't seen a remarkable change in unemployment in the last six years. In any event,
the one thing, as you recall, when Mitch Daniels, who is the guru of economic development as far as Republicans are concerned, said the one measure and the only measure that matters is where Indiana fares in terms of the national income per person. And we're still lagging behind the national income. And we've been lagging behind during all those years of Republican-controlled governor's race, governor and legislature.
I really wish you hadn't said that. She just hangs around my neck.
That's your mentor.
You could go back in time.
Your mentor said that was the only measure of success, and they failed on that. Now, he has taken some positive steps forward. The teacher pay, certainly finally recognizing that we have a public health issue that needs to be addressed, is important. On economic development, I mean, we'll see whether the LEAP project is all it's supposed to be, since they've been paying out through the nose on that and didn't study in advance what they would need in terms of resources in order to get that off the ground. But he's done some good things. Do I wish he'd done more? Yeah, because there are a lot of areas in Indiana that we're lagging behind our sister states and certainly the national average.
Nikki, was this about the speech from the governor that you expected for his final State of the State?
Yeah, I mean, he really struck a reflective tone and looking back at his 8 years, while also throwing in a few things he wants to get done, you know, for his final year. The Lilly announcement was, you know, a bright spot for him. But yeah, I think it was quintessential Holcomb, and even with a Henry note.
Yeah. I thought the most exciting part of the Lilly Endowment announcement wasn't just the dollar amount. I mean, $250 yeah. million dollars is
just
huge.
Not chump change.
No, it's absolutely not. So that's exciting on its own. But what those dollars have to be targeted at, which is blight improvement, redevelopment, and arts and cultural initiatives, which are sometimes things that we don't prioritize enough mm-hmm. because we have so many other things we have to focus on. Is that maybe the most exciting part of the Lilly Endowment announcement from your perspective?
Well, probably for me, yeah. but I think it also shows where we're trying to go in Indiana, that we're actually trying to focus more on things that people may not think are important. Arts and culture kind of gets like, oh, it's not the bread and butter. It's not something that is, but it's really important to quality of life. And I think that's something that Governor Holcomb has really focused on in his term is quality of life issues that often aren't talked about from the governor's perspective, because those are really the things that keep people in Indiana and make people want to come to Indiana. And I find that it's really those things that, well, not really top of mind issues, but they are always there.
Yeah. All right. Two of Indiana's members of Congress announced this week they will not run for re-election this year, 8th District Representative Larry Bouchon and 6th District Rep Greg Pence. In a statement, Bouchon cited scripture in his decision, saying, "For everything there is a season," and it became clear to him over the holidays that the time has come to bring his season in public service to an end. Pence's statement about his decision simply said that it was his experience as a Marine that led him to run in the first place, to serve his country again, and that it's been a privilege to represent the district. Bouchon has served in the U.S. House since 2011, while Pence was first elected in 2018. Four members of Indiana's Republican delegation in the U.S. House have announced they're not running for their seats this year. Bouchon and Pence joined Victoria Spartz and Jim Banks in that number, though Banks is running for higher office, the U.S. Senate. And Delaney, are you surprised at the amount of turnover in the delegation in 1 year?
You know, they might as well. They might as well resign. They haven't done anything in the terms they were there. They haven't. I mean, all they do are deny the election of Joe Biden and talk about insurrectionists as being tourists. It's just they can't pass a budget. You know, we used to have people in the congressional delegation on the Republican side and the Democratic side that we could point to with pride. They got elected to do something in Congress. These are not among them. And in 5 years, there'll be a trivia question and nobody's going to get it right.
This amount of turnover in terms of what it means to constituents is you're going to have a bunch of freshmen in those seats who, you know, hopefully they'll get things done. But when you're one of 435 in the House and being that low on the totem pole, is that going to hurt Indiana in terms of its ability to attract things to the state?
What have they done to attract them when they were there?
It does. I mean, particularly in the Senate, I mean, we've benefited from Todd Young being the head of NRSC and running, you know, he spent a cycle running all the U.S. Senate races. That gives you some cachet in that caucus that he's used.
And we've seen that play out in all of the hub designations that Indiana got late last year mm-hmm. From the federal government. That was a bill that Todd Young co-authored.
Right, that's an example. And when you're in the House, you can move quicker because it does turn over faster. And who knows what these, you know, when you get elected every 2 years, who knows what the outcome is going to be this year in terms of who's in the majority or what the margin is. Because what we've seen in thin majorities, you have 5, 6, 7 people that have an outsized
influence.
Amount of power
yes.
because they can lock up the process, and we've seen that happen. So it depends on how they handle it. You know, I don't want to go to Congress, so I'm glad there's people that still want to.
they may be afraid that the Democrats are going to take back control too.
If you're looking, and now There was some thought that Greg Pence might not run again. We saw a member of the State House already announce his candidacy like the day after Greg Pence announced he wasn't running for re-election. The same day? The same day. So that was clearly we kind of knew was coming. I don't think a lot of us knew that Larry Bouchon was going to retire, so we might see a little delayed reaction from his district. But if you were someone who was in one of these districts, why do you want to run for Congress?
Why do I get that question? I think you want to run for Congress so you can have some kind of power, change, help. First of all, I do like the idea of people not staying in office forever. I do like the idea of turnover. I think Bouchon said 10, 12 years
yep.
was what he wanted to do. I like that idea. So therefore, we're getting new ideas, fresh people coming in. But why someone would want to run? I don't know. What do they really want to accomplish? I mean, it's a different time. To your point, it's a different time. People don't seem to really want to actually get in there and do things. They just want to kind of be famous maybe write a book from it. I don't know. But another job, they're auditioning for another job. I don't know. But I don't see people really doing much anymore. It's just kind of getting there and pontificating and talking about the things that are wrong.
Given that all of these districts are fairly fairly red in the general election.
What do you mean, fairly red? They're gerrymandered.
Well, given that they're all fairly red in the general election, is this, when you combine it with, I guess, the Senate race, but particularly the governor's race, is this the most, like, chaotic primary season that you've ever seen in Indiana?
Yeah, I would definitely say that. Between the governor's race, the U.S. Senate race, just while I don't think is as technically as competitive, it's kind of crazy.
That's true.
I will say, I mean, I do think it is a concern for Indiana, though. I mean, I think the average term for Congress people going into this session was, you know, four terms at 8.5 years, something like that. And, you know, Indiana's delegation is very young. Like, we most of our delegation is under 2 terms. So
Andre Carson's a senior.
Exactly.
By far, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I do think there's, you know, a concern about, you know, whether we're going to be able to move legislation, do anything to help Hoosiers, you know, from the national level.
Yeah, I mean, after this election, no matter what the results are, in the entire delegation, Todd Young will be the most senior Republican by far, and he was first elected to the House in 2010. So that's, which is 12, you know, 14 years ago, but still, that's, you know, in congressional time, that's not a ton.
That's not much.
Yeah, right. In the U.S. Senate, they have a crypt in the cloakroom.
Time now for viewer feedback. Each week, we pose an unscientific online poll question. And this week's question is the amount of turnover in Indiana's congressional delegation a good or a bad thing? A, yes, for good. B, for bad. Last week's question was, do you expect the 2024 legislative session to be quiet and uncontroversial? Just 18% of you said yes, 82% of you said no, which is where I would have put my vote. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to wfyi.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Well, House and Senate Republican agendas this year are centered on education and workforce issues. House Republicans' top priority bill would allow state scholarship programs such as 21st Century Scholars and the Frank O'Bannon Grant to be used for workforce training, not just traditional 2- and 4-year degree programs. House Speaker Todd Houston says it helps further the goal of making a more relevant high school experience.
Getting more kids in high school classes, they're going to prepare them for college and the workforce.
The Senate GOP's top priority is improving student reading skills. Senator Jeff Roth says the bill's focus is identifying early those students who are struggling to read.
Schools will check with students in kindergarten, first and second grade to make sure they are on track to be proficient in reading by the end of the third grade. All students who are not on track must be given extra support through reading remediation.
The only students allowed to advance to fourth grade if they fail the third grade reading test would be English learners, students with intellectual disabilities and those with individual education programs, and students who pass the third grade math test. Get to it. O'Shea Boyd, let's talk about the reading proficiency bill that the Senate Republicans are putting forward. Will it move the needle the way we need it to?
I certainly hope so. I really think we need to really focus in on hone in on education. But I think it's kind of too late. Well, it's not kind of. It is too late to wait until third grade. I believe Senate Bill 1 talks about looking at kindergarten, first grade, second grade to see what. And you should know where students are falling behind that early on. Third grade, I think, is too late to late. Then there's also talk of the different exceptions that you can have. Well, we're seeing that too many exceptions are actually being so those students being passed, so students are still being promoted who can't read. So then where's the teeth in that? And I think there's still this option of we don't want to have summer school anymore. So we remediate during the year. I think we need to revisit that as well. Do we go back to mandatory summer school? I understand it's not popular for a variety of reasons, but is it better than having students continue on and not being able to read or go to fourth grade or not go to fourth grade? Like, what are the options here? So I think we need to put all those things on the table to figure out what do we really need to do to move the needle, because there's many things to do. And I think definitely starting before third grade. Third grade is too late. Yep. By third grade, you already know they can't read.
Yeah, the fact that they would now require the iRead 3 to first be taken in second grade, and if you pass it, you don't have to take it again in third grade. And then, you know, if you don't.
Those are great starts on the bill, and it makes total sense to start in second grade. You get in earlier, and you have more time to remediate. But I do think it's fair to point out a few things where I don't think the bill goes far enough, which is, again, there are only so many hours in those days now. They're already in school taking all that, so I'm not sure where you fit in all the remediation. Mm-hmm. And having, you know, making a school offer summer school but not requiring a kid to take it, it seems like a half step there. The other thing to point out is while the bill does, quote, require retention, it mirrors the language that already exists in state rule and schools aren't following it. So I'm not sure how it does anything different. There's still no enforcement on the schools. I guess their point is saying, well, now it'll be in state law, so they'll really have to follow it as opposed to administrative rule, which still technically has the force of law.
Let me ask you this question, because that is one of those questions that came up in this press conference, which is you're not mandating kids to go to summer school if they need remediation. Should the state mandate that?
I think they should. I think it should not be optional. We have to have third graders or second graders, whatever it is, we have to have a population that's literate. And they've got to be able to read, and if they aren't able to do it within the hours provided, then they have to go to summer school. That used to be the rule. Okay? And why we've abandoned it when we've got third graders failing reading tests is beyond me. I don't think that the legislature needs to get into the nitty-gritty of who goes ahead and who's held back. That's for the teachers and the parents.
To me, it's a balancing act. Which is worse, mandating summer school or holding a student back?
Mandating exactly. Summer school is the way to go.
Right.
That is exactly the question I was about to ask you. Which is going to be more unpopular with parents? Holding kids back?
Holding kids back, period.
Yeah.
I mean, mandate. One, they've got to catch them earlier. I think, you know, the governor and looking at second graders. I'm shocked it took us 15 years to figure out that if we find out if the second graders can't read, they're not going to be able to read in the third grade, and now we've got to hold them back. So why not start a year early?
Why not have right? Preschool for all of the kids, too? How about that?
I'm for that, too. But, no, I think holding a kid back is always just – there's so much wrapped into that from just a
– there's so much more likely to drop out.
You know, yeah.
Well, and I'm Senator
Andrea – which is why summer school is the
there's
smart
a lot
option.
More wrapped up. Exactly.
Democratic Senator Andrea Hunley yesterday talking about reading proficiency talked about if you're holding kids back, if you really are holding more kids back, finally enforcing the administrative rules or now enforcing a law – you have to have more supports in those schools than necessarily just a teacher who's providing remediation.
Just
you're also
time,
talking about
right, yeah.
social workers
right,
or counselors right, who are handling right. the mental effect of holding a kid back
right.
from their
right.
peers.
That's why it's a bigger deal because right. of all that.
All right. The Indiana Black Legislative Caucus says housing should be more accessible, affordable, and equitable for all Hoosiers, and that's the focus of the caucus's agenda in 2024. Caucus bills include measures to prohibit housing discrimination against active duty and veteran military service members, to ban foreclosures based on medical debt, and to double the tax deduction for renters. Caucus Chair Earl Harris Jr. says housing is an integral part of the American dream.
Owning a home is about far more than having a roof over your head. It's about giving Hoosiers a sense of security.
Some of the bills have come up before, notably Representative Cherish Pryor's legislation to ban discrimination in housing appraisals. Pryor says some members of the Republican supermajority don't seem to think such discrimination is real.
I think it's, you know, unfortunately, the legislature has not taken the issue as seriously as they should.
Harris did say that House Speaker Todd Houston acknowledged the need this session for further work on housing issues. Nikki Kelly, we've seen the Black Caucus have more success in recent years on some of their bigger agendas. We saw police reform in 2021. We saw, like, the 21st Century Scholars Program was a big thing of theirs last year, and education equity in general last year. Is this one that could have more success?
I think they could maybe get one or two of the smaller items. One bill I was particularly intrigued by was a bill that requires notice when a landlord is selling the property, and to actually make the new owner basically keep to the terms of the lease so they can't just kick people out willy-nilly. I mean, that one would be, I think, really helpful to Hoosiers if they move that.
Yeah, there's been attention, particularly here in Indianapolis, from both, obviously, Democrats, but also Republicans, including fair play to Attorney General Todd Rokita for looking at out-of-state corporate landlords who are not properly handling their properties here in Indiana. And this kind of gets to some of those issues. Are those the sorts of things that could find popular bipartisan support?
I think so, because we're seeing right now we have this affordable housing shortage. Now, we have no, I see apartment buildings going up all the time, constantly, but we know the rent is astronomical for a lot of people. Rent, buying a house, people can't buy a house. That's one of the easiest ways to build wealth for generations in your family is buying a house. So we're pricing people out of that market. People are no longer able to rent because of it's being so expensive. So I think, and we're seeing a lot of these out-of-town characters, landlords, they're pricing people out. They're buying property and increasing the rent the next month. So you don't even have a chance to even really actually prepare for that. So people are getting evicted left and right. And we know there's protections we need there for renters too. So I think this is something that both sides of the aisle will be looking at and can actually jump on board for, because we actually want to take care of Hoosiers, so they say.
I think I don't see how anybody could argue that service people shouldn't be discriminated against.
Yeah, right. So I think that one will find. Yeah, I think
and
that
the renter's credit should be raised, and we ought to find a way to help people with down payments, because you're exactly right. That's the way families build wealth, and that's what's prohibitive for so many people. So there could be ways we could help address the housing shortage by being a little innovative on the state level.
I want to talk a little bit about an issue that Ann just brought up, because that's one of the bills. I think it's Representative Earl Harris's bill on providing a fund, a state fund, that would help people with down payments who can't afford them, because that is often a huge barrier to getting into the housing market in the first place. But the way he pays for it is not with a general fund appropriation, so you wouldn't have to open the budget. The way he proposes paying for it is by essentially taxing folks who buy more than one single-family home. So you're looking at more and more corporate sort of landlords in that sense, not buying apartment complexes, but buying a bunch of single-family homes and then raising the prices for those or making them rental properties. So by taxing those, it would fund that down payment fund. And as he pointed out, if we don't have a bunch of people doing that and we don't have money in that fund, well, that makes housing more affordable because we don't have landlords jacking up the price. Do you think that's something that could find support in the General Assembly? Maybe not necessarily this session?
Raising that tax is always a challenge, but I do think in this policy space, there's been broad bipartisan agreement on the problem. And I think these are some good solutions that the Black Caucus put forward. If not successful this session, it could tee up, as short sessions do sometimes, big issues like this for the next long session.
All right. Well, finally, the Indianapolis Zoo is expecting its first ever rhinoceros baby next month, born to a white rhino that joined the zoo last year. Mike O'Brien, what is a good Indiana-themed name for the baby rhino?
Well, if the criticism from some of the viewers of the show is any indication, it could be named Mike O'Brien.
Mike O'Brien.
The rhino.
Because you're a rhino.
That's really good. I like that a lot. Anne Delaney, an Indiana-centric name for the baby rhino?
Oh, my gosh. I don't know.
So I came up with sugar cream pie.
Oh, well, no.
There you go.
That stuff is terrible. I'm going with
no, it's
speedy.
Not.
A, it's like racing,
cool.
But also is irony.
speeding.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
like
because they're not.
Here's the only problem. Could that be considered an illegal campaign donation to Representative Mike Speedy, who's running for Greg Pence's congressional seat? Yeah.
It could be.
I think that could be a problem. It's an in-kind contribution, I suppose.
What's your idea?
Oh, I have none.
Okay, good.
That's not my job here. That's not my job here to create.
But you do weigh in on occasion with these questions.
Not on one where I actually have to, like,
to the primary voters of the 6th congressional district, Mike Speedy is a classic conservative. He is not a rhino.
No, he's not.
Is that you?
The only
is
problem,
he's a mega?
The only problem Mike Speedy is going to have is he's absolutely in that district, but that is a very new part of that district that usually is further east in the state. So he'll have to introduce himself to a whole bunch
of
new people.
Gerrymandering. Good.
All right, that's Indiana Week in Review. One last mention of it.
For two this, I'm not even
it's true.
Our panel is Democrat Anne Delaney, Republican Mike O'Brien, O'Shea Boyd of Mirror Indy, and Nikki Kelly of the Indiana Capital Chronicle. You can find Indiana Week in Review's podcast and episodes at wfyi.org/IWIR or on the PBS app. I'm Brandon Smith of Indiana Public Broadcasting. Join us next time, because a lot can happen in an Indiana week.
The opinions expressed are solely those of the panelists. Indiana Week in Review is a WFYI production in association with Indiana's public broadcasting stations.